This is The Rock. Bill Watson. Welcome to Newsmakers. The Negro League Museum in Kansas City is a great place to visit. You can learn a lot about Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and Willie Mays. Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro League Museum, gives us the inside scoop on the museum. There's some great information from Bob. Enjoy the podcast. I've been to the Negro League Museum twice, and I got to tell you, I had a blast. I learned so much about Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron. And the person who usually tells those stories is the president of the Negro League Museum, and that is Bob Kendrick. Bob, thank you so much for being with me.
Ben, it's an absolute pleasure. Number one, it's always good to catch up with you, and certainly thank you for inviting me to be a part of the show.
You got it. The museum is located in Kansas City, and could you tell people what's going on that's new at the Negro League Museum?
Well, we've got a lot of exciting things going on. We're in the midst of working on a brand new exhibit build called Barrier Breakers. And Barrier Breakers will look at a comprehensive look at the complete integration of the game of baseball. A lot of people are surprised to learn that it took 12 years before Major League Baseball, before every team had at least one black baseball player. So Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier in 1947. The cycle is not complete until Boston signs Pumpsy Green in 1959. Well, many of those guys' stories have not really been talked about in any great detail. And so this new exhibit will look at that, a very comprehensive look at all those guys who integrated their respective Major League teams. We're really excited about that. We're also gearing up for the annual Salute to the Negro League with our friends over at the Kansas City Royals. That is Sunday, May 7th, and it's also Dress to the Nines Day. And Dress to the Nines is so much fun because what we've done now is we've encouraged fans who are going to the game to dress up the way they used to going to Negro League games. And of course, Bill, a lot of Negro League games were played on Sunday, and so black fans were leaving church and everybody looking pretty going to the game. And of course, the Royals will be in the 1942 Kansas City Monarch uniforms versus the Cleveland Indians, who will be the Cleveland Buckeyes on Sunday, May 7th. And so that's always a spectacular event. It's a great day, and it's obviously a great way to connect baseball fans to the history of the Negro League.
Now, Bob, you know, I'll tell you what interests me about the Negro Leagues is that all the entertainers back then who were involved in Negro Leagues, like Louis Armstrong, Cab Calloway, most people don't know that they were involved in the league at that time. Could you talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you had the great tap dancer, Bill Bojangle Robinson, was once part owner of the New York Black Yankees. And then those stars that you mentioned, Cab Calloway had his own semi-pro black baseball team. Louis Armstrong had his own semi-pro black baseball team. You know, quite often you would see the beautiful Lena Horne at those games, and she'd throw out the ceremonial first pitch. So it was always this close-knit relationship between Negro Leagues and of course, black entertainers. And I think there was also, Bill, a mutual admiration that was shared between the two. And, of course, back in that era, they were traveling what we now know to be the old Chipman Circuit. Mm-hmm. So they were mapping out routes in which they had places to stay and places to eat, and they supported each other. By day, the entertainers would go watch these men do their thing, and at night, the ball players would go watch the entertainers do their thing. I mean, Lionel Hampton was a devout Kansas City Monarch fan, so much so that the late, great Buck O'Neill would put Hampton in a Monarch uniform. He would sit on the bench and serve as an honorary coach.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. Bob, I got to ask you, not many Negro League players are left. And, you know, what is being done to make sure these guys are never forgotten?
Well, I think that is the critical role that the Negro League Baseball Museum plays. You know, we're here to preserve a precious piece of baseball and Americana. And you just touched on it. I think the most prevailing thing that we knew, Bill, from the onset was that we were dealing with essentially a finite piece of history. Mm-hmm. The people who made the history at some point in time were all going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And not only were they going to be gone, but the fans who saw them play were going to be gone. And so it was literally a race against time. And so it is the job of the Negro Leagues Museum to make sure that the legacy of, as I like to refer to them, as America's unsung baseball heroes, that they're never forgotten. And that's the purpose of museums in general, but I think it takes on an even greater magnitude with the work that we're doing at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, because American history had forgotten about these men.
Bob, as you know, I've had a blast at the Negro League Museum. But another thing I've noticed is that the current players go there every time they're in Kansas City, and they have a blast. And could you talk about the current players who have come to visit the museum?
Man, it's really exciting. Last year, we had a great year with getting guys by. You know, we had David Wright from the New York Mets and Curtis Grandison. Curtis has been a great friend of the museum. He brought David Wright and some other guys from the New York Mets who opened the season last year in Kansas City. That was great. And the respect that they had for the history, it was absolutely tremendous. We also had Bryce Harper, which obviously we're talking about one of the biggest young stars in baseball, who's not only a fan of the game in which he played, but he's a fan of the history of the sport. So as you can well imagine, he was blown away. And I've got to tip my cap to Dusty Baker, who certainly worked with us to get Bryce and Gio Gonzalez and other guys from the Nationals, and then Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley and Stephen Wright, my good friend Joe Castiglione, the longtime radio voice over at the Boston Red Sox. Every year brings a group by, and he was able to get Jackie and Mookie and Stephen and others from the Red Sox to come over. And so anytime that we get a chance to show the place off to young athletes is very special. And the thing that I remind the young athletes relative to the bond that they share with the Negro League is a love of the game. And they all play this game because they love the game. But you will never see a greater example of love of the game than you do when you visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. They had to love it in order to endure the things that they had to endure.
That's amazing. You know, you talked about the Royals earlier, and now that the Royals are like postseason contenders last four years, how much has that helped the Negro League Museum?
Immensely. I can tell you right now, there is nothing like winning baseball to ignite a city, and then you throw in World Series baseball on top of it. It has been a godsend. I mean, we've been so fortunate. And the fact that the Negro Leagues Museum has been right in the middle of all this baseball excitement that has taken place in Kansas City, and credit to those who are coming into Kansas City, members of the media who were following the Royals during those amazing playoff and World Series runs, to want to relate the heritage and history of our sport, which Kansas City certainly plays such a vital, significant role as we look at the heritage of baseball with the origins of the Negro Leagues beginning in Kansas City. And so it has exposed the museum to a level in which the museum had not seen previously. And so I think more people now still are aware of the museum than at any time ever before. And a lot of that has to do with the success of our Kansas City Royals.
I want to ask you, everyone knows that it's in Kansas City, but the reason it's in Kansas City because of, please fill in the blank.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Kansas City is the birthplace of the Negro League. That's where it all began. Rube Foster led a contingent of 8 independent black baseball team owners into Kansas City. They met at the old Paseo YMCA, the future home of the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center. And out of that meeting came the birth of the Negro National League, the first successful organized black baseball league. The Negro Leagues then, Bill, would go on to operate for an incredible 40 years, from 1920 until 1960. And, of course, it would give a playing ground for some of the greatest African-American and Hispanic baseball players to showcase their world-class baseball skills. And so that is why it made sense that a museum dedicated to this subject matter be right in Kansas City, because the museum currently operates 2 blocks from where the leagues were formed in Kansas City in 1920.
My final question, I can't leave without talking about Buck O'Neill. You know, I think it's a joke that he's not in the Hall of Fame, and I know he meant a lot to you. Could you talk about what he means to the Negro League Museum?
Well, he meant everything. You know, I tell people all the time, he was our power hitter. And Buck was, to me, one of the most amazing individuals to ever walk the face of this earth. and, you know, who happened to just be a great baseball player. But Buck was a Hall of Fame human being to go with the incredible baseball ability that he demonstrated as a Negro Leaguer, but then obviously a great ambassador and the work that he did to build the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And, of course, then dedicated the last 16 years of his life going out preaching the gospel of the Negro Leagues and the virtues of his museum to any and everybody who would listen. And so Buck played an incredible role in the history of this sport. And obviously I am biased, but I share that same belief that Buck O'Neill should absolutely be in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He had 7 decades of meaningful contributions to our sport along all levels as a great player, as a great manager, as a groundbreaking scout, as the major's first African-American coach in baseball history with the Cubs in 1962, and, of course, the role of having kept and elevated the consciousness of the Negro Leagues to a legion of baseball fans. And so, yeah, Buck meant the world to me personally, but, again, I think he meant the world to the baseball world. And even though he's been gone now almost 11 years, it warms my heart that Buck O'Neill's name still remains very prevalent and relevant in the game of baseball.
What's amazing, too, this was a guy who also coached Lou Brock and Ernie Banks. So this is a guy who
signed Joe Carter, Lee Arthur Smith. You know, he had a great eye for talent.
No question.
You know, he kept Billy Williams in the game of baseball. So Buck's role has been significant along all fronts.
Wow. Listen, Bob Kendrick, listen, thank you so much, and you have a great day.
Hey, Bill, always a pleasure, man. Looking forward to seeing y'all in Kansas City sometime in the near future.
You got it. Take care.